last night we left off in the middle of discussing Yorcha Sadikim's attitude toward alcohol, which I think is pretty much, you know, a good summary of the Jewish view toward alcohol. It's not all good, it's not all bad, but it is extremely dangerous, even though it can be helpful at certain times, certainly with regard to fulfilling certain mitzvos. But remember, we're in the Shaar HaSimcha, so the whole point of bringing all of this is because, so you would think that his gateway to discussing alcohol was that Yayin Yisamach Levav Enosh, and, oh yeah, by the way, you have to be careful about its dangers. But no, he was going through the negative forms of simcha, the kinds of simcha we need to be most scared of, the kinds of simcha that could be most dangerous. And you mentioned one of the kinds of simcha that is most dangerous to us is the simcha that comes from alcohol. But, you know, then the afterthought was, oh yeah, you also, there's a way to do it right, where a person can fulfill mitzvos and a person's mind can be broadened to a certain extent. So we're going to have a little bit more about alcohol before we, I shouldn't say alcohol, about wine. There's no discussion of Shar Mashkim HaMashakrim over here. Nothing about beer or booze, nothing about scotch or whiskey or anything like that. He's talking about Yayin, he's talking about wine. There is very little halachic value, certainly, to other types of intoxicating beverages. The only other halachic value that they would have, I guess, would be... Well, certainly the isser of losing yourself and everything that he's talking about would apply to other things. But in terms of positive value is that some other alcoholic beverages may be considered chamar medina. So when you're looking for something upon which to make, let's say, kiddush or havdalah, if you don't have any wine, because the halacha is you're only allowed to use chamar medina when there is no wine available to you. Not when there's no open bottle of wine in the fridge, but you have 15 more bottles in the wine cellar or whatever, in the garage or something like that. But when there's no wine available to you, then you could make on Chamar Medina. Some are noheg to make Havdalah and Chamar Medina during the 9 days, even though the Rama is pretty explicit that better to make on wine and give to a child, or if you can't give to a child, you drink yourself. But anyway, so Vizos Midas Shoseyayin. Back to our story. This is the proper measure, the proper way, the proper approach to drinking wine. Yasa mayayin l'refua l'da'agaso, kidei l'schazik betorah. That a person can use wine as a tool to get through his worries, to get through those things that cause him anxiety, in order that he strengthens himself in Torah. L'lamda b'simcha. To be able to learn with a sense of simcha. Now that's also very tricky, because if a person drinks just the wrong amount of wine, he's going to end up asleep. He's not going to be learning besimcha. He'll just be sleeping. Or he'll be, if he drinks the wrong amount of wine, he's not going to be able to focus on his learning. He's just going to be having these wild thoughts and his mind is going to be distracted. But there is some measure that will enable him to forget his worries and keep a clear enough mind to learn besimcha. And this is certainly true, that when a person is experiencing a sense of tsar, he's not able to learn properly. That does not mean that when a person is going through something difficult in his life, he's not going to be able to learn properly. Not at all. We know that history proves that the opposite, in fact, is true. Right? The Torah of Bavel is the Torah that we learn. The Torah of Galus is the Torah that we learn. Some of the greatest works in Jewish history were written under the most horrific of conditions. I mentioned before I was reading the biography of the Chabina Rav, the first volume of Dovid, and the second volume of Dovid Mesharim, of his unbelievable work of Shalos and Tshuvos, were written when he had no Svarim and he was on the run, and there was a threat of his arrest every moment for learning Torah, because when he was in Siberia, he didn't have pen and paper. So what did he do? There were like these sacks that they would deliver, potato sacks, and he would write notes on the potato sacks and save them, or little packagings of things, and just save those notes, and that became the Tshuvas Dovev Mesharim, an unbelievable kind of Yisurin that people suffered through and maintained the clarity in the Torah. So it does not mean that a person cannot learn unless all conditions are ideal. No, to the contrary. You know, I think they say Rav Shlomo Zalman. Someone said, one bacher told him he couldn't make it to yeshiva. He wasn't feeling well, so he's sorry. He missed shiur, or he missed or he missed seder or something. Rosh Hashanah Zalman said, if I didn't learn every time I wasn't feeling well, then I never would have learned. Meaning, not to say that we have to, obviously, if you're not feeling well, you got to get better. But just to say that things don't have to be perfect in order for a person to learn. But the point is, a person has to find that place of focus and that place where the worries aren't engulfing him, aren't overpowering him, aren't going to, you know, and that's more about mindset and your attitude than it is about, you know, dealing with, than it is about the, you know, how much life is throwing your way at any given time. You know, Soloveitchik used to talk about his year of triple Avelus, the year in 1967, 68, I don't remember, when he lost his wife, his brother, and his mother all in the same year. And he said he would have gone out of his mind if not for the Torah, if not for the time that he spent teaching Torah. That was like a time where everything else went away. So it's not about that a person can't learn when there are bad things happening, but it's hard to learn when that tsar is on your mind. A person has to be able to get through that in order to be able to focus. And when a Beis Din is dealing with their own personal issues in their mind, they're not going to be able to see clearly. They're not going to be able to judge things clearly. There were studies done. I think Malcolm Gladwell writes about this. That, they did studies of an Israeli court and an Israeli what do they call it when someone's in prison and then they can get out for good behavior. What was it called? Parole, right, a parole board, an Israeli parole board. So the parole board meets from like 9 in the morning, let's say, till 1 in the afternoon. Then they take a little, you know, little break. It's Israel, so they take like a break, you know, from 1 to 4 or whatever. And then they meet again from, so 9 to 1 in the afternoon. That last hour is the hour before lunch. And they realized that if you were up for parole and your hearing was closer to breakfast time, and further from lunchtime, meaning before they got hungry, then you have a much, much better chance of getting paroled. Anyone in that last hour before lunch, forget it. They were able to mamish show the statistics that having nothing to do with the case or the strength of the case, just based on how they're feeling. And if they're hungry and they're a little cranky, so that's it. They're not going to, not that they're trying, they're not trying to do an injustice, but that's just the way people are. That if a person is too caught up in his own tsar, he's not going to see things clearly. And a person is not going to be able to focus on tefillah if he's worried about his own tsar. Gam kshadam shari b'tsar misha medaber elav o misha mevakish men lo asosim o chesed ein lo koach la asos pakash asav. That someone asks you for a favor, but you're too caught up in your own problems to be able to think selflessly, you're not going to feel like you have the koach to help out. Uksiv be'eis rotzon anisicha. L'chein al derech zu yichavin ha-maskil ishlos yayin. So says Yerucha Sadikim, if you want to drink wine, here's how to, these are the things you have to keep in mind. V'yizar shalo yarbe b'shtia. Don't drink too much. She'yitzdarech levatel melachto v'asakav. So, very critical point. Don't drink to the point where you stop being productive. Productivity is a great predictor of simcha. When a person, you know, picture two afternoons in your life, and if this neither of these afternoons ever happened to you, your life. One afternoon is, let's say, you know, you're in yeshiva and you had like an amazing seder. You were learning for those who've been in yeshiva, you know, you have an amazing seder. You learned a 3-hour afternoon seder. It was like unbelievable. And it was just like you and your chavrus, it was just clicking that day. Good? That's one afternoon. Another afternoon, go back a couple of years. There was a back-to-back football games on a Sunday afternoon, right? Back-to-back. So you have to start with the pregame. Then there's football game number one, and then there's, you know, neither of the teams, maybe one of the four teams playing is a team that you actually care about, but, you know, then there's football game number two, so it's, what, 7 hours? 7 hours later, how do you really feel after those 7 hours? You watch it, but how do you feel after those 7 hours? Do you feel, like, invigorated? Do you feel like, yeah, wow, that was a great day. That was, you know, if only every day were like that. No, if only every day were like that, then you'd be that guy that I mentioned last week, who's buried with his gaming console in his hand, and is like that. That's not a great day. But human beings thrive on productivity, on being productive, and that's why there's such a high incidence of depression amongst retirees. Because when people retire and, their dream their whole life is to play golf and to spend their whole day doing nothing, essentially, it's very depressing because they're not contributing anything. They're not being productive. They're not doing anything. And that's not the dream. That's never the dream. A person thinks that that's the dream. If only I could just lie on a sandy beach for the rest of my life doing nothing, you'd be the most depressed person in the world. That's what you had to do. Okay, for a few days, a vacation, clear your mind, something like that. But at a certain point, a person needs to be productive. A person needs to be doing. Where did I read somewhere they had that? They found there was like one island somewhere in the Far East where the life expectancy was like 5 years longer than like the next, country with, the next highest life expectancy of another country. And they would try to make observations about like what they do differently there. They don't eat any healthier. They don't exercise much. What do they do differently there that they live longer? And what they discovered is, I forgot what language they speak in this place, but in that language, you know what the word for retirement is? There isn't. They don't have a word for retirement because there's no such thing. They don't retire. They just keep going. And, as long as you can be productive, be productive. And that's what keeps a person going. That's what keeps a person happy. So a person, if he drinks wine to the point where he starts being less productive, where he's not able to do things, well, that is going to lead him into a terrible form of depression, and that's not going to lead him to a good place. So he should make sure that the wine is not mevatel him melachto v'asakov. Now, certainly, as a religious Jew, we always have to be keeping in mind what's going to stop me from Torah and Tefillah. You might say, well, I was drunk. Anus Rachmana Patre. What do you want from me? I was an anus at that time. No, but you have to think ahead a little bit. You're not allowed to put yourself in a position. And this is not only true about drinking. Meaning, if you know that Shachris is at whatever time it is, and that if you stay up till 3 in the morning, there's very little chance that you're going to be there for Shachris, so that's your responsibility. You have to make sure that whatever you do, whether it be an activity that is, sort of a gray area, or even if it's an activity that is a mitzvah, is this worth the trade-off on the other end? Meaning if you know that there's going to be a Seder of Torah, that's a Seder Kavua, or there's going to be a Tefillah that is likely going to suffer because of this, so you have to be very careful about that. Oh, Adjiyar B'Schot V'Kalas Rosh. Also, you can't drink to the point where you experience schok v'kalas rosh in the wrong kind of context. That is not a good thing. V'lo yishta achiyah b'nechasav. Certainly one should not drink to the point where he starts being wasteful and destructive. V'lo yishta achiyiktsof v'mchaver achiyish b'kelim. Certainly to the point where he gets angry at other people. Sometimes people develop a short fuse when they drink too much. That would be very bad. It's very bad for b'nechasav v'mchaver. Achiyish b'kelim. A baltashkes like that, to be breaking things. Not only is it a baltashkes, even if it's your own kelim, it's scary. It scares other people when they see someone going around breaking things. Below yishta, who was it? Paul O'Neill, right? Paul O'Neill used to be a right fielder for the New York Yankees. Every time he'd strike out, he'd go into the dugout and he would break something every time. That's not like something to admire. I remember the commentator saying, "Wow, what fire, what passion." I mean, dude's got problems. I mean, you're going to strike out X amount of times, right? Okay, deal with it, move on, and play the next inning. If you break something every time, like that's not okay. So that's not the way that we react. Meaning, he's not hurting anybody. He's breaking his own bats. He's paying for his own bats. Let's say, yeah, be not the matzmo. You should be a human being. V'lo yishta. Also, a person shouldn't drink to the point where he starts revealing his secrets, or worse yet, other people's secrets. Sometimes people confide in you, and it's important to recognize that when someone confides in you, the appropriate response is okay, I'm not going to tell anybody except for that person who I'm going to tell not to tell anybody, so don't worry about it. No, if someone tells you that they're confiding in you and they don't want you to tell, then you don't tell anybody. We had something in our family, I'm not going to go into details, obviously, but something that we didn't want anyone to know. So we told our children, and we didn't want anyone to know. And somehow, like, the next day, it got back to us. And we said to our kids, okay, come on, what happened? Who told? And each one denied it. Yonah was in Israel. Yonah wasn't. So each one denied it. And then we get to my little daughter, Chani. And we said, Chani, who did you tell? Nobody. Who did you tell? I just told one little person. And it doesn't matter how little or big the person is. She just told one little person. So that's, you know, when a person confides in you, it's not going to work if you just tell one little person. Also, to keep your own secrets, which is interesting, because that assumes that you have your own secrets. That not everything is on Facebook. Meaning not everything is for the whole world to see. There used to be such a thing called privacy. That a person would have something that happened in their lives where they didn't need to tweet it or Facebook it or whatever, or Snapchat, you know, like they didn't need to go out to the whole world just because something happened in your life. It's okay to have secrets. Hopefully those secrets aren't too dark, you know, but it's okay to have things that are that you know that are your secrets. If you drink to this level, the wine is going to be a very, very negative influence in life. And you know, there's not even a Shabbos and Yontif exception to this. You know, there's a Shabbos and Yontif exception to that, like that might be the more appropriate time to drink appropriately, meaning if a person is drinking appropriately every day, you might want to check and see if you have a problem. But, you know, so those might be times to drink appropriately, but it doesn't mean that on those times you just totally let go of everything. Asher kosebe mesamachta lifnei Hashem elokecha. That's when you have to experience simcha. V'kosebe samachta b'chagecha. Lo yimshoch atzmo b'yayin b'schok v'kalas rosh. Shnemar tachas asher lo avadata Hashem elokecha b'simcha v'tov levav. An often quoted pasuk. Right, that you have to serve Hashem b'simcha, and therefore we see that you have to always be b'simcha. Says Yoruch HaSadikim, not therefore we see you have to always be b'simcha. Therefore we see halamadita shalonet stavinu ela al simcha sheyeshva avodas yotzer hakol. That your simcha has to be something that leads to avodas Hashem. That if the simcha is not promoting a sense of avodas Hashem, that's the wrong kind of simcha. It's tachas asher lo avadita. Don't forget those words. Avadita as Hashem elokecha b'simcha v'tov levav. It's not just to be b'simcha v'tov levav. It has to enhance one's avodas Hashem. That's the kind of simcha that we look for. V'yev shalavodas Hashem yisparach lo mitoch kalas rosh v'lo mitoch schok. You're not going to be able to serve Hashem properly if you're not in the right mindset, and certainly not in a mindset of shichrus. It's a long seder. We'll do one more paragraph. B'midas ha-simcha tuliyah mitzvah sasei. The measure of simcha that one has will reflect on a certain mitzvah asei. What mitzvah asei is that? She yatzdik hadin al kol ma'orosav. That a person will be able to take things in stride. When things happen in life, a person, it's not every bump in the road is going to shatter a person's emunah if a person has a sense of simcha. Now you could see where he's going to go with this, that simcha is very, very closely associated with bitachon. That bitachon is the comfort of knowing that Hashem has it all under control. That I don't control anything anyway, but the comfort of knowing, the comfort of the knowledge that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has it all under control. That is the definition of bitachon, and that is also a major part of the definition of simcha. And it's not a coincidence that of the, let's say, 20 pages that he spends on the Shara Simcha, about 10 pages of it are going to be about bitachon. Because bitachon and simcha are directly linked with each other. Shenemar v'yadatim levavecha ki kasher yiyaser ish espino Hashem elokechem yasrecha. That when Hashem punishes us, it is similar to the way a man punishes his son, meaning with a sense of love, with a sense of hope that it will make him better and that he will ultimately emerge a better person from the experience. Not to crush him, not to put him down. If that's what the parent is doing to the child, that is obviously a very unhealthy parent-child relationship. So much so that would probably qualify the parent as Aviv Rasha, where we pass from Halacha, there's no Chiyuv Kibbutz. Meaning if the parent is trying to break the child. But no, the parent is not trying, he's trying to build the child. So too, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to build us. Maybe this is a source for the idea that, they say when someone suffers that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't give somebody any sayon that they cannot handle. So I was talking to my cousin Rav Netanel a couple of months ago. He said, any idea what the source of that is? Like, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't give someone any sayon. And people always say it, but like, is there a source that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, yeah? I'm sorry? The Fast Toar. Right, that's an example of a Nisayon that we can't handle, and therefore he gave us an opportunity to. But does that necessarily mean that in general? I don't know. So, but maybe the idea is that we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't do something to crush us. As Rav Shachter often points out, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a Nisayon that we actually can't handle, then we're called an Anus, and Anus Rachmana Patre. End of story, right? We're not even obligated, we're not even, it's like a shota is not obligated for his actions, so too an anus. V'im acher sha'asa adam tshuva, lo yavo inyano betov, kemo batchila, mitzvah sasei lachshov b'livo, kilu tovasa nepach inyano l'ra'a. You know, sometimes a person says, I did everything right. I was suffering, I was mefashish b'masav, I did a cheshbon ha'nefesh, I found the problem, I did tshuva, I'm better now, and things haven't gotten better. They're still bad. So the only logical conclusion is I have no emuna. So he said, no. A person has to think that God is doing things for a reason. That it is for our, not just for a reason, it is for our own benefit that things are not going the way we would have imagined that they should. Maybe before you did tshuva, life was better because HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving you all the schar for whatever mitzvahs you've done, so that you won't get any of that schar in Olam Haba. Chazal say this in a number of places in Shas, that sometimes, you know, the Gemara in Brachos raises the question, why is it tzadik v'ralo rosh v'tov lo? So one of the answers that the Gemara has is that we don't know and we can never know. Right, but there are other answers that the Gemara has as well, less popular obviously, but there are other answers that the Gemara has, and one of the answers that Chazal have in a couple of different places, it doesn't account for everything, but one of the answers Chazal have in a couple of different places is that sometimes a Rasha is rewarded in this world to sort of clear the path, grease the wheels to Gehenim. Sometimes a tzaddik is punished in this world to grease the wheels, Olam Haba. You know, when the Gemara raises the question, tzaddik v'ralo v'rasha v'tovlo, that is not the Gemara's question. It is summarized incorrectly. People ask, why is it tzaddik v'ralo v'rasha v'tovlo? It's not what the Gemara says. Gemara says, why is it sometimes it's tzaddik v'ralo and sometimes it's tzaddik v'tovlo? Sometimes it's rasha v'ralo, sometimes it's rasha v'tovlo. That's the question. Meaning, if it were always tzaddik v'ralo and always rasha v'tovlo, that's your answer. We just saw it, right? Kadosh Baruch Hu is giving the rishonim whatever schar they need right now, and he's giving the tzaddikim whatever punishment they need. Right. Problem is, why does it seem so random that there are some tzaddikim that are living a great life and they don't have any problems, and other tzaddikim that are living a very rough life? Well, Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't love the tzaddikim that he's giving a great life to. He wants them to have a harder time and all of that. Why? So that the answer seems to be, we have no idea. Ukidarok shu also the son of Kain Mishalim La'av of Onesh Haveros Shasubal Mazah, that just like Hashem may punish those who do bad in Olam Haba and reward them in Olam Hazeh, the reverse may also be true. Kadesh Yuzakam and Akim L'chayim L'Haba, so he'll punish the tzaddikim in this world so that they'll have a clear path to Olam Haba. V'kol ze toli b'midas ha-simcha. Having that attitude, that understanding, is toli on having a proper measure of the attitude of simcha. Shu sameach b'chelko shechalak lo akel yisbarach. Ultimately, simcha means sameach b'chelko. Sameach b'chelko is not only a material thing. It's not only a gashmius thing. That, oh, your friend has this and you don't have that, be Sameach B'Chelko. Sameach B'Chelko is about everything in life. That if you're less or more intelligent than somebody else, shorter, taller, better looking, less good looking, less whatever a nicer family, not such a nice family, whatever you have, whatever your pekla is in life, Sameach B'Chelko means to realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you Chelko. Your chelek. He determined what needs to be yours in order for you to be the best you. And that's what he gave you. And it has nothing to do with what he gave to anybody else, because that's not chelko. That's his chelek. It's not your chelek. That's what it means, sameach b'chelko. To appreciate that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you exactly what you need in life to do what you are supposed to do to accomplish our mission in life. Okay.